Lucy, I'm home.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. My name is Ziva.
And I'm Erica.
And today we're going to be talking about Fred and Ethel Fight. This is season one, episode 22, directed by Mark Daniels, written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Pugh, and Bob Carroll Jr. It was filmed January 30th, 1952. So the synopsis of this episode is that the Mertzes have a marital spat and Lucy devises a plan to get them back together. She invites both of them to dinner and just kind of forgets to let the other know that they'll be at the dinner. I was being nice. She definitely doesn't forget. It was a scheme.
Yeah.
And by the end of the dinner, the Mertzes are back together, but the Ricardos are fighting. And the rest of the episode is just trying to get the Ricardos back together.
And if anybody is a Lucy fan or even knows of the history behind it,
if anyone's a Lucy fan,
if anyone just knows
anyone of, listening to this
well
podcast,
if you're listening to this maybe you are, but I'm saying if just a random anybody who knows of this show knows of the history with William Frawley and Vivian Vance, so this episode is kind of, you know, we were discussing earlier, very easy for them to act out.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like they didn't even have to act. They just got to be themselves.
Yeah.
The acting was when, you know, they were nice to each other and lovey-dovey.
Looked a little, we'll get to it, but still a little uncomfortable. But the history of this episode, much like a lot of these episodes, I'm sure were taking inspiration from the Yarnezes real life. This was the beginning of the episode was inspired by a real life experience with Lucy and Des Yarnez, in which they were helping a couple make up at a dinner party and then started jokingly discussing their own past fights, which again, why in the world would you do that?
Why?
That they had wine or drinks or something, maybe it really added to the inevitable fight that they had, but that was where the inspiration for this show was. And this was depicted on Being the Ricardos. If you saw this, the movie with Nicole Kidman, this is the episode.
The opening shot is mm-hmm. from this, you know, that's what they basically work on, the one opening shot.
Yeah.
Over and over throughout that movie. But yeah, exactly. This is the episode that comes from.
And the season and the episode was way off, but that's.
Oh yeah. I think it was like two. They said it was episode 204. Yeah. And it was like, no,
we're still season one.
Please. Thank you. But, you know, liberties, right?
That's true.
So when this episode first aired, March 10th, 1952, there was actually a coup going on in Cuba. General Fulgencio Batista led a military coup, and he basically appointed himself provisional president. So a little bit of information on him, because why not talk about a dictator on our episode? He was born January. This day in history. He was born January 16th, 1901. He passed away August 6th, 1975. He was a soldier and a political leader. He had two terms of political power.
Okay.
The first one was from 1933 to 1944. And he was actually really an efficient government leader.
Okay.
People liked him. He was very good. And so when he returned to power in 1933, it was a coup, but it was a bloodless overthrow of the government. It was widely welcomed. People thought that he was going to be the same politician that he was the first time around. Unfortunately for them, he was a dictator. He started jailing opponents using terrorist methods and making basically a fortune for the people that worked with him and himself. He stayed in power until Fidel Castro led a rebel force against him in 1958. I think it's just interesting that this all happened. And then another interesting fact was that when the Winnipeg Free Press did a front page story about this. Did you see this?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. So they did a front page story about the coup, right? Because it was big news. They also ran a human interest story at the same time. It was about a Canadian Navy veteran that got to meet his son for the first time.
What was the son's name?
Little Ricky. And what's interesting is that it would be 10 months before Lucy had
her own little Ricky. Yeah.
Her own little Ricky, Desi Jr. So it's kind of interesting that they had that. And that that was just, it was just kind of a coincidence, I guess. But
and this was all during the filming of this particular episode. So
but,
we started
but off- there did something did happen. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're good.
Something did happen when the episode was filmed, which was January 30th, 1950. Lucille Ball was featured on the cover of People Today magazine. Mm-hmm. And what was really funny to me was that she was on that magazine and then right under, it was like a tease for another, so it wasn't the same article, but it was a tease for another article about birth control methods.
Nor was it about her, right?
No, it wasn't about her. It was on a different, completely different article and page. But it was just funny because at this time she was actively trying to get pregnant with her second child. And she did, she announced the pregnancy just a couple months later from the print of that magazine.
That is interesting. It's funny is they do that a lot with magazines and celebrities. They'll put their face in and then the columns, you know, on the right or the left, it'll be advertising, you know, an article in the magazine, but it'll have nothing to do with who's on the cover. And it'll be like, different ways to, you know, enjoy your bedroom life. And it's like the person is, you know, speaking of this. And in this case, it looks like she's talking about birth control. But as it opens up, we have, again, this is the scene that's being depicted on the being the Ricardos, same outfits they wear.
You notice the flower was already, the flowers were already on the table.
On the table. She's setting, Lucy is setting up this, and I remember distinctly Nicole Kidman wearing the same, you know, the same outfit she has on there. And, you know, she's very happily putting together this dinner in the middle of the, you know, and it makes you realize how much space they don't have, that they have to have the dinner in the living room where everybody watches, you know, or walks by to get from one room to another. It's so cramped that that's the dinner area for four.
I actually wrote in my notes that we did that before. We set up a table like in the corner of our living room. So it's still in our living room. It's just in the corner. We would set up the table in the middle of our living room because we gave up our dining room to Apollo so he could have a playroom. But our house is just so small that like, and we don't even have that little like thing in the kitchen where two people can sit down, eat other.
Oh, like a breakfast nook.
The table. Yeah, it's like a breakfast nook. You're right. Yes. But that, I mean, technically they probably could have had them sit, but this is a fancy dinner, right? So
the linens, they
definitely want to fill it out. Yeah. And so I looked up that the tablecloth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Quaker lace tablecloth. Model 4161. And I looked up because I'm always very interested is if you can still buy it. And of course you can, because you can buy almost anything. You're gonna pay around $50. Okay. A little bit more, but you can find it on eBay. And then obviously the longer they are, like the larger they are, the more expensive they're gonna be. But I just thought that was cool.
So she's setting up the table because she's got this plan in mind to get the Mertz back together. And so she's, you know, has this dinner prepared. Ricky walks in and, you know, covers her eyes, kind of cute, like, oh,
that's that. Yeah. Sam.
Yeah. Whatever. And then of course, no, that didn't work. She says some American names and then she goes into Pedro, Pablo, Jose. No. And finally, you know, so it's kind of cute. What I did love, and I wrote this down, was her heart shaped earrings. I was trying to see, I didn't have enough time, but I wanted to see where else you could find those, because I know she wears her jewelry repeatedly, you know? And so, I just thought those earrings are really cute.
We'll have to keep an eye out for them. Mm-hmm.
And, he's like, oh, who's coming to dinner?
And besides meme and yum,
whom is coming to dinner? By the way, the shout out to Sydney Poitier. Rest in peace. Okay. It's a movie reference. So, you know, and she avoids the question of who's coming, and he does his infamous Lucy, because, you know, she's defying his answers or his questions.
How dare she?
And, and so I love the back and forth as to if they aren't and he is, oh, and yeah, she yeah. won't, then how come? Because she's explaining Fred and Ethel want to fight. They haven't seen each other. So I kind of want to get them back together and not let the other one know, like you said in the plot or the summary.
Yes. So Ricky, during that questioning, right, one of the, you know, he says, like you said, they are, they aren't, he is, and she won't. The he is he staying at the Y.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a teeny, teeny deep dive on the Y, which is actually the Young Men's Christian Association, which I didn't know that the YMCA was called that.
YMCA.
I'm sorry. Young Men's Christian Association.
All right, go ahead.
It was founded in 1844, and its aim was to help put Christian practices in principles into practice. So developing a healthy body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So until the late 1950s, almost all YMCAs in the US were the hotel dorm room type hotels
Fred
can stay at. Now, I did do a quick look. There's YMCA of Glendale, where they offer affordable rooms for single men. So that's in Glendale, California. YMC Blue Ridge Assembly is in North Carolina, and they offer rooms. And then New York has the largest amount of YMCA still.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the West Side YMCA, the Vanderbilt YMCA, Greenpoint, but you can get a room for like two guests, shared bathroom, like a queen size bed, for about $99 a night.
Oh,
so yeah, that's not very horrible. That's affordable.
It's rare to hear that, because of course YMCAs are like swimming classes, basketball mm-hmm. games, you know, charity events. Yeah, but
there's definitely no YMCAs around here that have
right
and hotel so rooms or dorms.
After Ricky is like, well, I guess you already put this together, he says the cast is dead. And Lucy's like, the cast what? Is dead. And she says, hold on, I think I know, the die is cast, is what you're trying to say, because of course Spanish. And so I did look that up, because I was under the impression that it was die, D-Y-E, this entire time. And it's die like death, D-I-E. So he wasn't too far off. He just mixed up the words a bit. And so what that means is, of course, an event that has happened or a decision that's been made and cannot be changed. That's what the die is cast means.
Okay.
And that expression has nothing to do with the modern day process of die casting or metal. The die here is a singular of dice. Another thing that I learned, I didn't know that that's what that was. So the die has been cast is synonymous with the dice have been rolled. And Julius Caesar is supposed to have spoken this phrase when crossing the Rubicon. So it's just all of this under the cast is dead.
Two of us getting all this information about
you come here for the Lucy, but things. You stay for the history.
They fast forward.
I know. They're like, are they done yet?
Seconds forward.
Nobody cares about the YMCA. Nobody cares about the die is cast. Okay.
So I think I found that interesting. So that's all that matters. Maybe not, but I think it's fine. And then did you get any information on Dorothy Dix?
I sure did. Yeah. He refers to her as that because she explains what the reasoning. There's a lot of history in this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, the reasoning as to why she's putting this dinner together, trying to get the Mertzes back together, and refers to her as thank you, Dorothy Dix, who is actually Elizabeth Meriwether Gilmore. She's widely known by the pen name Dorothy Dix, who was an American journalist and columnist. And as a forerunner of today's popular advice columnist, Dix was America's highest paid and most widely read female journalist at the time of her death. Her advice on marriage and was syndicated in newspapers around the world. It's fascinating. With an estimated audience of 60 million readers, she became a popular and recognized figure of her travels abroad. That is fascinating to know that she
it had, really is.
She caught the attention of that many people with her advice and, you know, journalism.
People would take my money to get my advice. My advice isn't that good. I'd be like, all right, you have to pay me if I'm going to listen to your advice.
And then,
So before we move on, I'm so sorry, but I wrote this down and I forgot to mention it. I don't like when Ricky mentions that she like basically has no brain. I know he's joking.
Yes.
I know that he is, right? But like, and then he keeps going, like looking for it and stuff. And she's just trying to help a friend.
It's like every time she has an idea, other than being in a show, let the girl put a dinner together for her best friend who's going through a marital crisis. And
right. She's just trying to help out.
So what you're referring to is when he says, sometimes I wonder what's in that little brain of yours. So he says, you know, turn around, let me see. So he looks in her ear, like can see through it. And he says that picture is kind of crooked. That's just mean.
And then he also calls her Lucy Esmeralda McGillicuddy Ricardo.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the second time mm-hmm. in 2 weeks that we've heard her name, her full name.
Esmeralda.
So like she's really like pushing his buttons apparently these past 2 weeks. Okay, so we get, he's like, all right, fine, they're coming. And mm-hmm. Ethel is the first to show up.
I love what she's wearing, by the way. It's very youthful. It's very youthful on her.
They did a really good job. I don't know if they were trying to like do that because Fred's gone and
like she took the time to dress herself up.
Yeah, I don't know. But she definitely looked more youthful than she usually does. I mean, we can see a little bit of her cleavage, which I don't know if that's, you know, they're a bit more modest. So it's very low cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like tight fitting and like
sort of top, yeah. T-shirt. And that's, I know, I don't see that again. This is why this outfit stands out to me all the time, because you don't see it again. And it looks kind of like a t-shirt type top with kind a low cut.
Yeah, I think she looks beautiful. So she comes in, she's saying she's, you know, been having the time of her life. She almost didn't make it. And then, you know, you find out pretty soon that that's not true when she starts crying.
Oh, you really miss him, don't you?
When she says, so I wanted to bring this up. So she mentions that she hasn't eaten in 3 days. And that's when Lucy says, Ricky says, oh, you must really miss him. And she says, no, he hasn't left me any money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, this is supposed to be a joke, but it got me thinking, what happened back in those times when women were given allowances and they didn't have any money on their own and a man leaves? Like
exactly
for a little bit of time or a long time, like they just go hungry until they can figure out.
Well, you bring up a point. Let's say you have a husband who travels for work or something. Now we're talking in the 50s. I'm assuming this is just an assumption.
Sure, they give him a few food budget. Then
know that that you would leave a food budget, things like that. But in this case, he was being petty, so he purposely didn't care to leave money. So it's not that he, I mean, he's cheap as it is, let alone when he's in a bad mood, you know, so he purposely did that. But it's still pretty darn depressing that if he's not there, she can't eat. And especially he's in a bad mood.
On the other hand, part of me was like, all right, your best friend lives right above you.
And you talk to her every
day. What took her so long to come? I mean, maybe it's like a pride thing.
Yeah.
But with how much they portray Ethel loving food, like, I feel like she would have come up and been like, can I have something to eat? You know, like, I don't know. I don't think she would have waited 3 days. But anyways, we're looking far too into this. I thought it was interesting when we consider, you know, the possibility that there were people back then that were like either pettily not giving money or on purpose not giving money.
Mm-hmm.
So Ethel's excited. She notices the fourth place setting. She gets excited when Lucy basically is like, yeah, I invited, does she call him young or attractive?
No, she doesn't. I don't think
no,
she does.
She just says a man.
It's just for her. I'm still a married woman. I mean,
and then right away, it's like, I gotta go.
She calls it a real dream. Nose. Yeah.
Yeah. And then while Ethel is powdering her nose,
asking for the Fred good perfume.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. she's a married woman. The faces Ricky's making is like, you don't know what you're in for. It's your husband.
You're getting all dolled up for your husband.
Mm-hmm.
So while she's out, Fred comes in and we hear that he tries to play off quite similarly. Like Ethel does, that he's been having the time of his life, but
he's a free man again.
He isn't. I don't think. Like, I feel like deep down he misses her, and he also doesn't like eating peanut butter sandwiches.
And so, of course, the line here is, you know, Ricky, I've been doing everything I used to do before I was married, and they both make a face like, is it, you know, what were you doing before you were a married man? It just, you know, sowing your wild oats. What's happening here? He's like, no, I've been playing basketball, handball. It's like, okay.
Alrighty, Fred.
A wild young Fred. And so Lucy says, you know, I invited a young lady and to visit you, a cute young chick to join you for dinner. And Ethel at least had some hesitation of like, no, I'm still a married woman, but okay, let's see what this is about.
Oh, Fred's right on
no,
it.
No, he's like, all heck over yeah. I mean, the disrespect. You're still married. You're just in a fight. Oh, my goodness. It's the name of the episode. You guys,
it's like that Ross and Rachel.
We were on
they
a
were
break.
On a break.
This was no break. Oh my gosh. So yeah, he immediately gets excited at the note, you know, the idea that there's a young lady waiting for him. Where, let's be realistic, it would not be a young lady waiting for Fred,
right? I mean, or she'd have to be delusional. No, people,
Ricky almost like
people. That's really bad. But for Fred, I mean, what, he doesn't have a whole lot of redeeming qualities as a suitor,
right?
Like, he's cheap, and that's a big one. And so, anyways, when Ethel comes in,
giggling, by the way.
Yes, this is one of my favorite lines because I love Fred when he's like, is this your idea of a cute young chick? And then he's like, you'll never shop for my poultry.
He's such a jerk. So they're both very highly disappointed that it's, you know, their spouses, their respective. Well, yeah. No, they're actual spouses.
They're very, yeah.
And so I guess they're just like, we're not doing
they
this.
They both decide to leave.
Yeah, we're not doing this. Yeah.
And Lucy's like, fine, leave Ricky, go get the coats. And she rushes in to get the meat because she's like, I know this will make them stay.
At least one of them.
At least one of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then Fred is the first one. He's like, well, if Ethel's leaving, yeah, I'll stay.
The
might as well.
So good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Ethel is like, no, I'm going to stay and eat too. Because why wouldn't she?
Yeah.
I love when they sit on the piano bench. I think when Lucy asks them, do you mind sitting on the piano bench? And they're sitting down. Ricky crosses behind them. And you can just see him like full on smiling. And I feel like that's Desi.
Oh, yes.
Like, I think he just enjoyed watching them trying to sit on this piano bench. Like, I think he just found that really funny. Because once he sits down, he composes himself a bit and he isn't, but it was like full on grin. It was just,
I feel like there was a lot of improv in this episode, very subtle improv, but just, you know, certain quirks and reactions that weren't exactly written in the script, you know, that worked great. But yeah, they're both forced to share a piano bench. And there's not too much fat, is there? There certainly is. Oh my gosh. The pettiness is off the charts in this episode.
So petty. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I love, this is just me realizing, this is the first time I noticed it, which is crazy because I noticed like all the china and things like that, and dishes and stuff, but they have a two holding side serving dish.
Oh.
Like, when she's serving herself mashed potatoes, there's mm-hmm. mashed potatoes in one side and then like green beans or something in the other. And I went, that is so cool. Like, yeah. I want that because that just consolidates everything, you know, into one instead of just.
Are you drinking wine? Different...
No, I'm drinking champagne.
Okay. Because I, ladies and gentlemen, I think. She's being fancier. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny.
Celebrating just being alive, you know,
orange juice.
See, we're making mimosas on Saturday. And so we got the champagne and Colin was like, I really want to try it. And so we did.
Cheers to that.
That's what we're celebrating. Anyways.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they're serving dinner and they've got the gravy boat. And she's, of course, again, the petty level is just off the charts.
Passing
she's
everything like past Fred.
Across Fred's face. Yeah. And I love gravy. Really? Oh, yes. I love gravy. She just ignores his I love gravy statement and hands it over to Lucy. And they're trying to cut. I think it's a steak they're eating, trying to cut it, trying to, you know, use their elbows for the knife and the fork. And of course, they bump into each other, which ends up into a, you know, some sort of tussle with their elbows and Fred ends up dropping her off, the bench and lands on the floor. No. That is just
that's gold. That's comedy gold right there.
Although the expression on Bill Frawley's face, again, this seems very natural. This seems like he's a little too on board with doing this, but yeah, it feels very aggressive.
It's like, this is good. I enjoy this. But they pick her up. They decide, you know what, I can't, even with the food, I'm gonna go. And so they get their coats and then they put them together in the same coat, which of course made me think that the two of them in the coat really just reminds me of the dragon.
Oh yes,
two heads are better than one
Oh my gosh. Oh. and then this is where it starts to, well, I gotta tell you, one of my most favorite lines, I think ever, in terms of the insults that they, you know, spew back and forth is, you know, first they're trying to figure out why they were fighting. Neither one of them can remember, just the fact that they ended up insulting one another. And, you know, Ethel apologized. No, you know, Fred apologized. She called my mother a weasel. Well, she said, my mom looks like a weasel. And then she apologized.
Oh,
Ethel.
So petty.
And she, I'm sorry, your mother looks like a weasel.
Your mother looks like a weasel.
I can't. That was the that's the best line, because and you know, it's funny, in this particular episode, Ethel's down the road in this episode, but now this is the first time they ever mentioned either of their mothers. It's just kind of interesting because Ethel's later.
We find out that, I mean, it's in Ethel's homecoming or
a hometown.
That episode, the hometown, that we find out that her father's a widower. So she must have died, or there was consistency here, or she died somewhere between this episode and the time she went down there. But so they do finally, you know, they make up, they sit back down. Lo and behold, you can eat on a piano bench together.
You can't just run past they make up, because this is the only solar eclipse of a time you're going to get Fred and Ethel being lovey-dovey and even kiss. So
okay.
I mean, they're like, you know, baby names, sugar lips or whatever they call each other. And so uncomfortable. And they're like, I like it better when they were fighting, because this is nauseating. So much like we discussed the Arnezes did in real life, Lucy and Ricky started to talk about their own fights and how very little they ever fight, which is, again,
why would you say that?
Why would you and say then, that?
Yeah. Well, then Fred has to point out he made it worse.
Yeah.
By pointing out, like, hey, you guys were fighting last month, because you only came to the fights with me because Lucy wasn't speaking.
Yeah.
And then of course Ricky's like, well, I, you know. Yeah, it was bad, but I put a stop to it. And of course, Lucy's like, excuse me, you put a stop to it. And I love how it goes from honey to deer to baby to just nothing.
That's always uncomfortable. Now, have you ever been in a scenario where you could see that a couple is slowly rising to the level of fight and it's uncomfortable.
Like trying to back off, like, yeah. Oh.
Because it's always uncomfortable to watch the back and forth. And, you know, you don't want to be nosy, but you're kind of right there.
You're interested. Yeah. So Vicky, well, he says, explain, or he says something, right?
No. Excuse. That's excuse. No excuse. No, because
and
she
Lucy makes fun of him.
Because, no, well, Ethel says, let her calm down. She's excited. And that's when he says, that's no excuse. Yeah.
And Lucy says something about that's English, you know? And what does he say?
So he goes off in Spanish. Yeah, because she mocks his accent and says, huh, that's English. And she says, he says, yes, that's English. I studied it in university and I speak it better than anybody in this room is what he says. So yeah, he very much speaks English. And he says that in Spanish.
How she goes, how dare you say that to me? And he goes, what did I say? I don't know, but how dare you?
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So he leaves.
Yeah. I'm very upset. And now they're fighting after the merchant's makeup.
She's like, let's finish this dinner. And she starts crying, of course. Mm-hmm. So that's the cut scene. And the next scene we see is Lucy in her bedroom, correct? So we pan over. And I think they very clearly, they pan over his side of the bed that's completely made. Mm-hmm. And then you see her side and then you see her sitting. And Ethel's already up and dressed. So you're kind of seeing that, like, she's
the very next
sitting there. Mm-hmm. But she's sitting there. She's probably taking a longer time to get up and get dressed because she's just so sad.
But her husband didn't come home.
That he didn't come home. I love because they both end up saying this when Ethel says, why don't you call him? Mm-hmm. And say you're sorry, and she's like, what, go crawling back to him? Absolutely not. Besides, the line was busy.
Yeah, so she already had done that.
she already tried but she's now at the in the mindset that she made her move and it was busy, so now
it's on him.
He has to figure it out. He has to make it. And so Ethel decides, you know, let's do a tragedy,
a sympathy routine,
because that's one of the things that gets people back together all the time
when something tragic happens, even when you're at odds. Yeah,
get hit by a bus. Why a bus? She could have broken her leg. She could have gotten sick, food poisoning. I don't know. Something. No, let's have you get run over by a bus.
Very intense. Yeah, very intense. And so she's like, okay, goes along with it. And
she's like, that's a bit extreme. And then Ethel is like, well, not really, we just dress you up. But then she's like, all right, that's good. And so that's the end of that scene.
Then we have Ricky at the I want to say like the corner store or the
corner pharmacy. Store. It was a drugstore.
Corner drugstore. Yeah, so he's eating peanut butter sandwiches. Okay, now, I don't know if I'm going to lose the majority of listeners, but...
Do you like peanut butter sandwiches?
I don't like peanut butter, period.
Ah.
Are you dismantling this partnership we have going, or are you on board? What's happening here?
I can only eat peanut butter sandwiches if it's very, very light peanut butter and a lot of jelly and milk. So I'm not a huge peanut butter fan. So
I've tried to get into it since I was a child. I just, my mouth just says fathom eating an entire sandwich. Now I get it. You sprinkle it with some jelly. All right.
Lots of jelly.
So whoever's
just
still
a peanut butter sandwich,
whoever's still listening, the non-peanut butter eaters, we move on.
You're allowed to have your own opinion.
He's eating peanut butter sandwiches because that's all he can get from the drugstore because he hasn't been home all night, so he can't eat a home cooked meal. And then Fred comes in and sees him there and gets.
He's like, I was here the other day,
having the same meal you're having, and he orders a grape juice
from who?
Our girl Hazel Pierce.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this drugstore set would also be used again in the gossip. Mm-hmm. And Fred actually calls out for Hazel. in that episode, but you don't get to see her as much. Before we move on, just that first intro shot you see of him eating the sandwich, you get to, for the Philip Morris advertisement in this was like above and beyond, because not only is there the safety first call for Philip Morris, but then there was the two Philip Morris
on the side,
one on each side.
They were drowning in Philip Morris advertisements and ad placements. And then
the magazine racks below or behind him had Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And she's actually, this is just a fun fact, she's mentioned 8 times in I Love Lucy, which is only equal to the amount of times they mentioned Clark Gable.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a big name. She's a big name in there. I mean, she's a big name everywhere, right? So
yeah, she's on the cover of the 1952 issue of Pick, and that's what you see behind.
Yes. So Mickey. I did another little
history
fact finding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Hazel Pierce is the soda jerk. And I always wondered, why do they call it a soda jerk? And it's inspired by the nickname for a soda clerk who operates soda fountains. The soda jerk title was inspired by the jerking action a server used to swing the soda fountain handle back and forth when adding soda water to a fountain beverage.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So quite similarly.
Yeah.
That they are going to
come up with a different route. Yes. Idea to get her to come.
He's going to save her.
From a house fire.
Yeah, we'll discuss this later. I have some problems with that, but let's say when it gets to that. So they're gonna save her from a house fire, right? Yes. And so then we see it all transpiring, right? Yes. So we cut back to Ethel getting Lucy all bandaged up, and this, if you guys are thinking, hey, that looks really familiar, that is because it is pretty much the same costume.
The bandage that, and the head bandages and
on the quiz show that Hazel Pierce had on in the quiz show.
Females are fabulous.
Yes. She gets her all set up, gets her in bed.
Yeah. And this, before Ethel leaves, because it's, you know, did you call Ricky? You know, does he know that you did, I've been in this crash?
Terrible accident.
Ethel's like, yeah, I called and left a message.
Could you imagine getting that message?
Left a message and then leave your friend in this bandaged state of, let's hope he gets this message before the day ends, because she could be sitting there for hours in this state.
Also, I know this is probably for like aesthetic purposes, right? But you don't put casts on top of clothes.
Oh,
all of her casts are on top of her clothes.
Oh, cast.
And it bugs
the
bejesus out of me. You put casts up against the skin, and then you put the clothes on top of the cast if it fits. Yeah, but you don't think he would come in and be like, so why is that on top of your pants? Are you going to wear those pants for the next 6 weeks? Like,
yes.
First of all, yo. Second.
Yeah, so she's sitting there hoping that Ricky gets the message at work that she's been in this horrible bus accident. She didn't die. She already went to the hospital. She's all bandaged up, and they sent her home all within a couple of hours.
Right. And apparently Ricky didn't get the message either.
He did not. He
must have been out because there he is setting a fake fire.
Now, this fire alarm, now you have to go back to the time that we are speaking of, 1950, 51, whatever this is. That sounds like a kid's toy. So even if you are in the room next to where this fake fire alarm is happening, would it really startle you to think that there's a fire and maybe go and investigate? It's
maybe the smoke.
It's ridiculously, hilariously fake.
And then he's yelling. Yeah. Oh, it's definitely fake. Mm-hmm. But of course, Lucy doesn't know that. And she doesn't. We're supposed to believe that she won't think through this. So she opens it. A bunch of smoke comes through. So I guess you could think, you know, he's got this smoke, little, like, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, this little machine that is creating smoke. Where did he get this? Because he just has it at the ready to.
Yeah, fake the same a fire. Place they got that extra gun.
Okay. from our previous episode.
And a baby elephant later on. Anyways,
so he has a fake fire alarm. He's yelling like a madman. And when I say he, it's, I love how Ricky, Fred and Ricky.
Yeah, Ricky's just like lounging on the couch, right? So there's such a difference because he's lounging, making all this up, and Lucy's scrambling around trying to get things. Now she throws clothes out. She throws her henna rinse out, which I think is really funny. And I found a quote about the henna rinse that I want to read. Because they said it wasn't actually that far mm-hmm. off that she would try to save her henna rinse. Of course, right. Those are glass bottles, right?
Yes.
Also, how does the henna rinse work?
I don't know. Do you have to bleach your hair
first and then put on the henna rinse? Or does the henna rinse do it all? I'm going to look it up, guys. Okay. We'll try to figure it out. So anyway, Irma, what's her name?
Cusley
was her hair stylist.
Yes.
She would later on go on to say that she had a safe of it in my garage, Irma's garage. She loved to gamble. And when we did a show in Las Vegas, she met a very wealthy
sheik.
And he heard about her problem about running out of the henna. And he said he'd send her the henna. And he did. There was a lot of it left when she left the world, but it had to be given to the estate. I don't know what little Lucy did with it.
Yeah.
So she loved her henna, guys.
She loved her henna rinse.
This is the first time we're going to find out that she uses a henna rinse.
Yes. And of course.
Because later on, it'll be a joke.
Oh, yes.
You know, that I have to get my hair rinsed. I mean, washed.
Yeah.
You know,
and Lucy, of course, as we all know, is known for that fiery red hair, which started when she did her film for 1942's Du Barry Was a Lady. That was the first time that hair color was even introduced on Lucille Ball. And
wanted to set herself apart.
Yes.
In the Technicolor movies. So that's why she
And that
chose.
Sure did it.
Yeah.
So that's Egyptian hair dye, the henna rinses. And, you know, that ever since then, of course, it's been her signature color. And it worked very well for her because I don't know many other actresses, especially during that time, that would have used such a color. And that's why it was so important for her to save that. And so, of course, she's scrambling. She's panicking. She's freaking out. And she ties mm-hmm. bed sheets together to absolutely nothing because there's nothing to anchor them to. So she goes over the window or outside the window and goes over, which is really scary.
And yet I laugh every time.
Which kind of reminds me of that episode when she's in Hollywood and she goes over when she's trying, I think she's trying to get over to a Cornel Wilde's apartment and she goes over the balcony, same sort of concept. And she falls, and she says, thankfully, Ethel's awning was open.
It wouldn't have. I mean, an awning is just a piece of fabric.
Yeah, you go right through it. You bounce. It's not concrete or anything. So,
yeah. So it wouldn't really have. It might have slowed her down a little bit, but I'm sure she still would have hurt herself.
Mm-hmm. So she, you know, after, you know, there's some sequence where it sort of changes into a next scene where time has passed, that she looks a mess. She's still in the cast and the bandages. And Ricky's like, are you sure these are fake? Are you sure this is, you know, you're okay? And she's like, no, I'm totally good. This was part of a plan. The fall was just happens to, you know, unfortunately happen during the same time and there's no fire. So they make up, they apologize. And then Fred comes in, making sure she's okay because Ethel's not okay because she's upset about this whole plot.
Yeah, so she leaves. So my question is, even if Ricky convinced Lucy that there was a fire and Lucy didn't do anything, mm-hmm. right? How was he gonna... So he's supposed to go in there and like save her, right?
Yeah.
Bring her back out, be her hero. Bring her back out into the living room where there's no fire.
Yeah.
Like, did they not think that through? Because there's only one way. He didn't have a ladder, so he was either going to throw her out the window anyways, or or he was going to walk back into the apartment where it's very obviously set up. Like, so I don't know. I just was like, that you didn't think that through. Maybe I'm just
none of this feels like it was thought through. So we're just going to go with none of this was thought through, because even if, let's say, he believed, let's go with Lucy's story, he believed the bus accident, she would have to show bruises, bleeding, hospital bills, or a hospital stay. And so you'd have to think that he just believes.
If you get hit by a bus, you're not walking home.
Oh, and Ethel just leaves her there.
Yeah. It's not grazed. It's not like a tap. You were run over by a bus. You are not going home that day. They're going to check for a lot of internal, like a lot of stuff.
Oh my God. So with, so Ethel is upset about this plan, like we said, and Fred says, well, I'm glad you're okay, because Ethel's mad and she went home to her mother. Again, another mention of her mother that we've never actually met or seen. Just meet her father the one time, but yeah, that's pretty much it. It's a corny type of episode, but you know,
it is,
you know, we appreciate the corny. And, again, this was very much centered around in the Being the Ricardos, movie, in which Lucille Ball supposedly gets up in the middle of the night and, you know, she kind of can't sleep because of the way the piano bench scene was happening, and a lot of that for the morning of the taping. But the seasons, just if you watch Being the Ricardos, was totally off, because this was from season one, episode 22, not, what did they say, 204 or something like that.
204, yeah.
204, yeah. This is early on in the series. But all in all, it was cute. They get better as time goes on. You know, I think they were just working out certain scenarios, but
yeah. And I mean, yeah, I think it was a good episode. I liked it. It's one of those like stupid silly episodes where you're like, that's stupid, but I like it.
Yeah,
you know. And I I looked up, apparently henna is like, you buy it in like powder form, you add water or liquid to it, and then you put it on dry hair, kind of like a dye, but it's not a dye. And you don't have to bleach your hair, but it's going to turn out differently for every hair color. So she was a brunette naturally, but I don't know how dark of a brunette she was, because there's like us who's like brown, black. And right now, like, you can see, but I've already dyed my hair red, so my roots are like black. And that's my natural, like, brown, black is my natural hair color. So I don't know.
And then she had a blonde phase.
I wonder if she went through the blonde phase and had it bleached when she first henna'd it, and then just kept henna-ing on top of that, if that makes sense. Like
a lot of henna-ing, yes.
Henna-ing. Because apparently you're supposed to do it like once a month.
Is that still a thing? Or is it just before they were able to mass produce what we know as hair dye? Now, is henna still a thing?
I don't know. So when I looked it up, it kind of looked like they were using it for redheads to make their hair more red. But it seems like there was quite a bit of information on henna right off the bat. So it looks like you might be able to. Should I henna my hair?
Henna your hair. So on our next episode, it'll be a video.
I don't think that'd look good as a bright red.
Doing Du Barry was a lady. Next episode.
There you go. So
that's it, guys. Again, find us everywhere. And, you know, we're moving through season one, episode 22.
We're going to take a small break from UV review though.
And yes,
I've already done it. Who knows? But we're going to do
this. We have a review of Forever Darling, the other Lucy and Desi collaboration in a film, which I'm really excited.
Well, neither one of us has seen it, so it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyways, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Come back next time. Maybe.
Having a ball pod at gmail.com, having a ball pod on Instagram, and having a ball podcast on Facebook and YouTube. Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.